Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Colin's Edge right here on blogtalkradio.com. I'm your host, Colin Jobe, coming to you tonight from Toronto, Canada. We have a really interesting show for you tonight. We're going to be talking about the history of Haiti. And my special guest, Jean Saint-Ville, will be calling in any second now. We'll get right into it. We're going to talk a lot of things about Haiti over the next hour. And I hope you guys are listening, and feel free to call in if you have any questions or comments. I'd definitely love to hear what your take on the situation in Haiti has gone on. And we're going to be talking to Jean Saint-Ville as he tells us all about Haiti and what he thinks is needed in order to get that country back on its feet and make a difference for the Haitian people. Should be very interesting, folks. As you folks are well aware, there was an earthquake that took place in Haiti back in mid-January, and it's been quite devastating to that country. Approximately 200,000 people have died, and just a devastating situation to a country that's been deemed the poorest in the Western Hemisphere. But what a lot of people don't know about Haiti is the history of it, and that's what we're going to try to address tonight. And once our caller calls in, we'll dive right into it and talk about the history, what's gone on, what's going on, and what's required in order to elevate that great nation. There's a lot of things about Haiti that people don't know, and I don't want to touch on it and let the expert elaborate on it when he calls in. We should hear from him any second now, and then we'll get right into it. Folks, also, I just want to let you guys know, if you have any questions or comments in regards to tonight's show, feel free to call in. Our number is 347-838-8683. Once again, 347-838-8683. And also, the chat line is available as well. And I'd love to hear from you in regards to the chat line. And feel free to let us know what you're thinking via the chat line as well. Should be very, very, very interesting. So it's hopefully, as I said, we should be hearing from Jean any second now, and just a little behind schedule, but it should just bear with us. We'll get started, and take a listen. Also, folks, I want to let you guys know that if you get a chance, check out Colin's Edge right here on Blog Talk Radio. Lots of good shows there. Just did a show with Dr. Dennis Kimbrough, the author of Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice. A very interesting book. Get a chance to check that out. We've got Chosen on Michael Jackson. We've got Maxine the Maximizer, How to Get Organized. We've got Chosen on the IMF. Lots of good stuff there. So take a listen when you get a chance. And hope you tune in to Colin's Edge. Jean, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good evening.
Good evening. Good evening. Good to have you, brother. Good to have you. Welcome to Colin's Edge right here on Blog Talk Radio.
It's a pleasure to be here, and I hope that time we're going to spend together is going to be useful to your listeners.
I'm sure it will be. I'm sure it will be. Let's get right into it. We're going to talk about the history of Haiti. I know you're a Haitian, and you've written extensively in the past on your country and the history of your country, and there's a lot of conceptions, but I would imagine, mainly misconceptions about Haiti. So hopefully tonight we can elaborate on those and clear a lot of those up, and talk about what's, as I mentioned just prior to you calling in, we'll talk about the past, we'll talk about the present, and we'll talk about what's in store for the future as well, and hopefully the folks will find it rather informative. Once again, Jean, welcome. Let's touch on the history. Can you give us a brief history of Haiti, and let us know. Tell us things that we may have heard about. Tell us what we need to know about Haiti.
Yeah. Well, I'll try to speak about that history that is mostly unknown. But is well accessible through some very good books that have been written about Haitian history, but also through some very good web accessible information as well. And one article that I just saw written this weekend on Counterpunch is by Reverend Williams Alberts, titled "The Sacrifice of Haiti, America's Foreign Policy Pact with the Devil." And this is an article that came in the weekend edition of Counterpunch, which is accessible to counterpunch.org, counterpunch.org. And
counterpunch.org, okay.
Yes, so the title of the article is "The Sacrifice of Haiti." Now, I think this is an interesting article to start with, not because it references my article titled "A Giant Step for Mankind," but because this is written by a Christian reverend who deals with some of the key issues of why Haitian history is so maligned and unknown in the current era. And so this will take us to the history of the people who currently inhabit Haiti. To begin that story, we'll have to go to where humanity began, in Africa, because the majority of the people in Haiti today come from that place where in West Africa, Africans begin to suffer the attacks of their European brothers in the early mid-1400s, when Pope Nicholas V declared that it was fair game and, in fact, a duty for Christians to attack non-Christian nations and pillage all of their possessions. This is the papal bull of 1451. But the Portuguese themselves begun the attack in 1441. People might say, well, then why are you starting the history of Haiti in Africa? Well, that's because we have accepted for a while now that one of the important things that African people need to start doing when they're telling their story is to start their story on the basis of their own viewpoint and of their own people, as opposed to accepting to recount the history of the Europeans in America and basically using the Africans as mere backdrop to that story. And therefore, you would find a lot of the time when we talk about black history, people would start immediately to talk about racial slavery, when this is a rather recent phenomenon that deals with our history. So we start that story in the west coast of Africa, because from that moment of this attack by the Portuguese on the west coast of Africa in 1441, which became institutionalized with the papal bull of 1451, it was open warfare on the whole African continent, which would lead to the Mahafa, the great tribulation that African people have been dealing with since that period. And it led to Africans replacing the Taino people, who were inhabitants of the islands of the Caribbean, which were first inhabited by these Taino people. But on the arrival of Christopher Columbus and his crew in 1492, on the island of Haiti, which was the first place where the Europeans settled a colony, very quickly the Tainos were massacred. According to some historians, there were about 1.5 million Tainos on the island at the arrival of Columbus in 1492. Less than 50 years later, they were almost all massacred. They died of disease as well, but mostly because they were enslaved. And so it was a Catholic priest, Bartolomeo de las Casas, who came up with the idea that Africans should replace the Tainos who were massacred on the mines working to enrich the Queen of Spain. And as you know, very quickly, the Spanish were joined by the French and the British in the colonization of the Americas, starting with the Caribbean and then moving inland to what is currently the United States of America, Mexico, and eventually Canada and the rest of the Americas, north
right.
and south.
Absolutely.
So I don't know if you want me to continue on with,
with
the arrival of the Africans. So the Africans begun.
Please do.
So the Africans began arriving in 1499, and basically from 1492 to 1803, Haiti was slave plantations controlled at various times, depending on the wars happening in Europe, occupied by the French, the Spanish, and the British. Sometimes all three of them at the same time occupying pieces of the island. Now, this situation turned where the French became the dominant colonial power in the 1700s and occupied the western part, most of the western part of the island. And the Africans were enslaved on either side of the island, out of the island. And basically, they were mainly fighting for their freedom using poison. So you'd have a leader like Macandal, and later on after him, Bookman, who would go and poison the water sources, and that would be their means of resistance. And the women would also commit suicide, because according to the Code Noir, which was the law enacted in 1685, to legislate how the plantations were to be run, the slave plantations, the African woman did not possess anything any more than the African men, including her milk from her breast, which belonged first to a newborn white child or to the white master. And so in that situation, African women would commit suicide and make sure that they don't give birth to children who would be doomed from birth as slaves. Other forms of resistance included, of course, the organizing of the Maroons, who would go into the mountains and train using martial arts, using poison, using all kinds of techniques, sometimes working with the few surviving Tainos to learn the medicinal properties of the plants on the island in order to survive in the mountains and then wage war against the European powers. However, this kind of resistance was not very efficient because, of course, when they would poison the water sources or raid a slave plantation, they would have to kill a whole lot of Africans as well because, as you know, there were a lot of distinctions between the Africans who were enslaved on the field and those who were enslaved in the houses. And the Africans who were enslaved in the houses, and especially those who were born in the conditions of slavery, who never knew freedom, would develop a kind of kinship with their tormentors, and in fact to get to a point where they would identify more with the Europeans than they would identify with the Africans. And so it was a very complex situation, especially when the French divided the types of people by classes, giving more freedom, if you can call it that, to the intermediary class, who were the offspring of white males who raped African women to create a new class of people called mulattoes, and became the dominant members of that class called the affranchis, or the freed Africans. And so
the perceived free Africans.
Yes, indeed. Yes.
Sorry, go ahead.
And so indeed, what happened is that by the late 1700s, it started to emerge a set of African soldiers who were trained using European weapons. One of them, and the most famous, is Toussaint Louverture, who joined the Spanish army to offer his services to fight the French and the British. And by doing so, he ended up at the head of a large army of Africans trained using the same war techniques and instruments that the Europeans had at their disposal. And eventually, that army, led by Toussaint Louverture, and then Jean-François Biassou and all of these famous Haitian soldiers, ended up consolidating into a revolutionary Haitian army, which would switch side depending on what is happening in Europe. So in the late 1700s, they joined the French when the French declared a republic, and then they started to talk about freedom. Although the French, you know, in 1789, having declared the French Revolution, still continue to have hundreds and actually millions of Africans enslaved in the Caribbean. And so that struggle led to the Africans defeating successively the British forces. About 55,000 British soldiers lost their lives in the Haitian Revolution, beaten by Africans. The Spanish losing an equal number of soldiers. And then Napoleon Bonaparte, once he realized that the African general, Toussaint Louverture, who had become the head of the island and ruling black, whites, and mulattoes effectively, from the 1799 to 1802, decided that he was going to re-enslave all the Africans because they had declared a pseudo-emancipation in 1793 as a result of the Bois Caïman revolt of the Africans. And so Napoleon's brother-in-law, Leclerc, succeeded in tricking Toussaint Louverture, capturing him in 1802, and basically subduing the African revolutionary forces. And Toussaint Louverture eventually died in France after he was betrayed by the French, whom he trusted a little bit too much. And he died April 7th, 1803, of hunger in Fort de Joux under express order of Napoleon Bonaparte that he not be provided food. And
why would he trust them, given what's gone on, given the history?
Well, it's a very complex situation. The only day of rest that the African had on the island, he would go to church, and the priest would be teaching the Africans that it was God's order that Africans be the slaves of white people. And that it was so ordained since, you know, the curse of Ham and even the curse of Cain. And so you need to realize that a whole lot of the people were born into slavery, never knew freedom. And like I said again, after a while, people become accustomed to the situation. And it's not all the Africans who were in revolution. And so, you know, we're talking about hundreds of years here. And after a few decades of mental conditioning, of falsifying history, you know, these Africans, after a while, were being taught that Africa was a land of savages. And in fact, you know, if it wasn't for the white men capturing them and reducing them into slavery, even God, they wouldn't have known. And it's surprising that, you know, some people listening to this, you know, might realize that what I'm saying here is true. You have African people to this day who actually believe in that kind of nonsense because of the mental conditioning.
Right.
So, you
right.
know, they, you know, you have African people who are convinced that God is white, and you would not be able to convince them otherwise. And so then Toussaint Louverture did not escape that. For all his revolutionary spirit and intelligence, he actually believed that if he negotiated with Napoleon Bonaparte, you know, which a lot of people consider to be reasonable, that, maybe they will share the power with him. And in fact, you could argue the same thing happened in South Africa very recently. But what really, transpired is that power never concedes anything without a demand. And so France realized that Haiti was the most successful plantation for in the Americas. I mean, Haiti was producing for France more wealth than all 13 British colonies in the Americas combined at the time. I mean,
really? Combined?
Yes, combined. All 13 British colonies combined did not produce more wealth than what Haiti was producing for France. And because, you see, the exploitation of that island was based on a model where the French really didn't have to invest anything on the island, because all they did was have about 30,000 white colonizers, and basically they were mining the sweat and blood of over 500,000 Africans. No infrastructure was built on that, except for the basic arrangement for cities like Cap-Haïtien, Port-au-Prince. But in terms of expenses, it was a very cheap way for them to exploit. And in fact, they worked the Africans so hard that the life expectancy of a 19-year-old African who just landed on the island was basically 7 years. And
wow.
What they did is go back to Africa on a consistent basis to bring new arrivals, which is also the mistake that they made, because then eventually what happened is that you had a demographics on the island where you had more people who had known freedom and were enraged at the system than you had people who had accepted, who had been broken in spirit and in body and accepted racial slavery as the norm. And so the revolution, sometimes people are looking for the reason why it was successful in Haiti and not in some other places in the Caribbean. And demographics has a lot to do with it, with the way that they were importing new arrivals from the Congo. In some African societies that were already well organized and used to doing warfare against the Europeans. Because meanwhile, the Europeans continued to attack Africa, and you had all kinds of resistance struggles inside of the mainland of Africa as well. For instance, Toussaint Louverture himself is the grandson of a king, the king of the Aladas. His father's title was actually the Kehukinu, the king of Alada. And to this day, you will see, if you go to Benin, the kingdom of Dahomey, where most of the Africans from Haiti come from, you will see the lineage of Toussaint Louverture. So, but they captured Toussaint. And you will notice that when you read about Haitian history, they will mention Toussaint Louverture because he tried to negotiate with the French, like I said. And people would speak as if Toussaint Louverture is the one who created the Haitian state. But that's not the case. Not to belittle the contribution of Toussaint Louverture, because this man was a military genius. He would, learn how to read and write in his adulthood, taught by another African man called Pierre Baptiste, who was his godfather, and clandestinely, because an African was not allowed to learn how to read and write on those conditions. But this man, illiterate, would find ways of learning what is happening in Europe so that he would change his allegiance based on what war is happening in Europe between the French and the British and the Spanish. And he would train his armies and beat the most powerful European nations of the time. That having been said, when they captured Toussaint Louverture, it was his lieutenant, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, who actually had a different approach than Toussaint, having seen how the Europeans are so attached to material wealth that they will never give up the territory. Dessalines often took off his shirt to show how how many lashes he has suffered since his childhood, and the scars on his back, to prove that, you know, the only way to deal with the Europeans is to use a tenth of their barbarity against them, and that, you know, it would be important to not trust whether it is the French, the British, or the Spanish. And so eventually, Jean-Jacques Dessalines defeated the large expedition that Napoleon Bonaparte sent with his brother-in-law, Leclerc. And on November 18th, the Battle of Vertières, they defeated the last of the French military, and the French basically left Haiti, some of them going to Baltimore in the United States, and eventually back to France. And Haiti declared its independence on January 1st, 1804. And with that declaration, Haiti also declared itself an oasis for all human beings in search of freedom. And the Haitian Constitution declared that any person who lands on Haitian soil and who was formerly enslaved automatically becomes a Haitian citizen and a free person. And so, and you know, that revolutionary spirit was also reflected in the fact that the Haitians decided to name the island, because the French had had named it, and the Spanish before them, Hispaniola, or Little Spain,
right.
And the French had called it Saint-Domingue, and the Haitians said, we want to honor the first people who lived on that island, the Tainos. You know, as you know, most lazy people these days call of these peoples of the Americas Indians. But, of course, we always remind people that Indians live in India. Although Columbus thought he was going to Asia and decided, since he got lost, that, you know, those people, we will call them Indians. But out of respect, the Haitians said that, you know, we want to honor that the Taino people and rename the island exactly what they themselves had called it before, which is Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I. And that's why the inhabitants of the island are called Haitians.
I see. Very interesting. Very interesting. Very interesting. Wow. So, as I listen to you, I mean, there's no doubt that Haiti is significant, not just to Haitian history, I mean, the people of Haitian descent, but African history globally. And when you think about it, something like a revolution taking place in 1804. A slave revolution, the only successful slave revolution in the history of the world. This is significant, and it's kind of, when you think about it, you say to yourself, why don't I know more about this? I mean, because even I think of myself, I consider myself a fairly well-read individual, but there's tons and tons of stuff that I don't know, and it's something that, you know, those of us who know, like yourself, have to find a way to enrich the ones like myself who are in search of this knowledge, because I think it's important, because, you know, people, when they think of Haiti, they think of, you know, what they've seen over the last several weeks. But unfortunately, most people are lazy and don't take the time to understand the history. And I think if they understood it, it would enlighten them significantly and probably help their perspective to open up, if not change. So
absolutely.
I really appreciate you taking the time to give us a quick synopsis of Haiti. And a lot of people, when I hear of Haiti, you know, you think of the Valiers and things of that nature, you know, Papa and Baby Doc, and as of late, Aristide, we don't get
but
the full
know,
story.
Brother, yeah, you know, but you know, this is world history, right? I mean, they talk about three major revolutions that took place in the Americas: the French, the British, in recent history, the French, the British, and the Haitian Revolution. But you know, the French Revolution and the American Revolution did not create a universal freedom principle. None of them did. It's only the Haitian Revolution that accepted the principle that all human beings are equal. And And the reason that we don't know about it is precisely because the Haitian Revolution led to the creation of a nation that creates a conflict for the Europeans who currently rule the world.
Right. Right. So there's a fear, you know, and let it get out.
Yeah, and that's like that's why we say that Haiti is a mirror that disturbs, because the image that it reflects, right, it's a true image. It doesn't allow room for all the fallacies that have been used to claim that, you know, we live in a democracy, like, you know, from that Columbus discovered America. It shatters this myth. It shatters the other myth of that, you know, we are living in a Christian democracy.
Right.
So,
hold on. Yeah. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, you know, and so we say it's a mirror that disturbs, because when you read that it was a Catholic priest that came up with the idea to use enslaved Africans to replace the Tainos, it shatters that myth that, you know, that the followers, the self-claimed followers of Jesus have brought civilization to the Americas. But, you know, as we speak here, it's important to note that it's not only about Haitian history that we are ignorant. We are ignorant about the history of the peoples of this world in general. Like today, if you ask me about, you know, the people, the nation of the Iroquois or the Mohawk of Canada, I don't know anything about that, yet I live in their land. Right here,
right.
Or the history of the Inuit people, the history of all these people that out of laziness we call Indians or any other you know, Aboriginals or whatever, because we have entered into this ideology of erasing the nationhood of these people. See, that's what we do when we don't name them what they have named themselves, and just give them some generic name like that. Whereas, you know, we call the French French, we call the Americans Americans, we call the British British, and some of these places in Europe are very tiny places. Okay, like
right.
Belgium, you know, that's a small little place, but we recognize their nationhood, and we never refer to European nations as tribes. But we
right,
would call
right.
an African nation a tribe. So all of that is part of a construct that has been dominant for the past 500 years, because there has been a racial war in action, and that racial war, that principle, has suffered a great defeat in 1804. But it wasn't. It wasn't crushed. We continued to build societies on the basis of racial domination, and to this day we are seeing symptoms of white supremacy being the cornerstone of the societies in which we inhabit, and that's why, you know, Haiti continues to be a mirror that disturbs rather than one that is celebrated and welcomed for the lessons and experiences, the positive experiences that it has brought to humanity as a global family.
I hear you. Very interesting. Very interesting. So, yeah, like I said before, it's clear that it's definitely, as you said, world history, and it's something that we all need to seek out, so that we can enhance ourselves and definitely enhance our knowledge. And what in terms of the black world, and I'm talking this in particular the Caribbean countries, do you think that they support history in the manner in which they support Haiti in the manner in which they should?
Well, you know, again, that's kind of a difficult thing to discuss, because what do they know about Haiti, and what do Haitians know about them? You know, I am always reminded of that anecdote told to me by a friend from who was born and raised in Tanzania, and and now lives in Canada, that he was in the Bahamas and he saw two black kids playing. And then they started to, you know, to get into a little verbal fight. And one of them, you know, wanting to curse the other, says, "Well, you know, you're a Haitian." And the other one, wanting to outdo him in terms of, you know, his insult, say, "Well, then, if I'm a Haitian, you're an African." Now, these are two African kids playing.
Right. So
they have no idea they're African. All right? And so now, I took the example of children, but I could easily take the example of adults, because they don't know that, you know, during the time of racial slavery, the Spanish, the British, you know, any one of them would take a woman who has four children and sell one child to a British slave ship, and then another one to a Spanish slave ship, and that child would end up in Cuba. The one sold to the British slave ship would end up, you know, somewhere in the United States, and then, you know, another one sold to a French slave ship would end up in Montreal, Quebec. So now you after you know a few years, you would end up with these kids carrying British name, English name, one carrying an English name, another one, you know, being called Pedro in Cuba, and another one carrying a French name in Quebec.
Right.
But these are three children from the same mother, and then that's how the Americas were populated. But you know, you go and ask, you know, a Jamaican, an average Jamaican, what he knows about Haitian history, it would be very seldom that you would find that they do. It would be a very educated Jamaican who would know something about Haitian history. And the reverse is also true. If you go to Haiti, we don't know anything about the Bahamas. We don't, you know. So, and that's not taught in our schools. The whole school system when it wasn't the white missionaries running them, it was their products. You know, the Africans who grew up, you know, worshiping Leonardo da Vinci, convinced that, you know, this picture is a picture of a god named Jesus. This
right.
kind of mental work that
Slavery.
Is done on us, brother, it's something that took 500 years. You don't erase that just because you've created CARICOM. Or you know, just because you have a progressive leader who you know who's leading a couple of Caribbean islands. So yes, we have seen, for instance, since the coup of 2004, amazing courage displayed by leaders in Guyana, in Jamaica, for instance, when the United States, having participated in the racist coup that took place in 2004. Against the Haitian state, where they took the president of the time and dumped him in Central African Republic, and very illegally and criminally conspired with the French and the Canadian government to make sure that the Haitian president cannot go back not only to Haiti but to the hemisphere.
Right.
Well, you had a situation where a Jamaican congresswoman joined with Amy Goodman of Democracy Now, with black activist Rendell Robinson, who now lives in St. Kitts, fed up with the racism in the United States, took a plane and went to the Central African Republic, took President Aristide and his wife, and returned with him to the hemisphere where they joined their daughters. Before he ended up going back to Africa to live in exile in South Africa, where he still lives today. So, yes, we've seen a lot of courage in the Caribbean. We've seen, for instance, since the earthquake, you had countries like Senegal offering land to Haitians so that
right.
our brothers and sisters can go and live in Africa. But, you know, do we... Is enough done? I don't think it's a matter of is enough done by the Africans for Haiti, as it is have we Africans who have managed to, you know, through education, debunk the mental slavery, the chains that are in our heads because we grew up in that Christian racist mentality, who managed to liberate our minds. Have we done enough to educate ourselves and to help our brothers and sisters find access to that information in Creole, in Kiswahili, in Wolof, in Ewe, in Fumbe, in Xhosa, in Zulu, the languages that our people actually speak. We've written a whole lot of books in English and Spanish and French, but that's not what our people speak. And so as long as we keep on producing, you know, works in the colonizer's language, and we don't produce this knowledge, we don't share that knowledge, whether it is scientific knowledge, historical knowledge, the great works of Sheikh Anta Diop, the great works of Walter Rodney, of Molefi Kete Asante, Amama Zama, and Professor Karenga. All of these things, or the elder who just died the other day, Ivan Vensotima, who wrote They Came Before Columbus, we need to produce these things in languages that our people speak. That's what Sheikh Anta Diop was saying long time ago, in terms of using Wolof as a primary language in Africa to share scientific knowledge. Until we do that, exactly. Yeah, it cannot be something that, you know, we find as interesting facts that we know about our history and that we go and boast about knowing that. If we do that, what's going to happen? It's like just before I spoke to you, brother, I was watching on TV here on the island of Madagascar. We have Africans who are convinced that people who are suffering mental illness in their community are suffering from possession by the demon, you know, some little beast that the Christians have created that's called Satan. So often they portray him with a little red,
red elephant.
Red tail or whatever.
Right,
you know?
Exactly. And horns.
And horns. And you know what? These Africans in Madagascar are putting chains in the legs even of children. And then they go in and they isolate these people in a little room, and then they come with their Bibles, written, of course, in European languages, and they go and torment these poor souls who are already suffering from mental illness, you know, screaming in their heads the name of some white guy called Jesus so that they can be healed. Of course, they're not going to be healed. So, but who's responsible for that? We are responsible for that kind of nonsense taking place in 2010.
Absolutely, absolutely. I want you to hold that thought. We're going to touch on that in a minute. We have a caller. Welcome to Collins Edge. Thanks for waiting. Hello.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Thanks for waiting for us. Your name and the city you're from.
My name is Self Kingdom as a Law, calling from Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
All right, thanks. Welcome to Collins Edge. Your comment in regards to tonight's show?
Excuse me?
You have a comment? You have a question or comment in regards to tonight's show?
I have a question. The guest you have, he spoke on the natives, so-called natives of Haiti, and the island being called Haiti and the people being called Haitians, and I recognize the history in that, but one thing I noticed, he continues that the word Africa or Africans, there is no research that I ever studied that show that people of color chose that title for us, Africans. You know, I even try to find a word where you had some brother saying Afuraka. I found out that was false. So one of the things I know about liberation and freedom, when a person puts you in slavery, they don't just take your name away. They also take the name of your people away. So one thing we know is the word Africa and African, that was imposed on people of color by the Caucasian, and it was a form of control. Like every way you study the word Africa and its origins, it comes from some form of colonialism or something coming from the Caucasian. So I want to ask the guest, what words have he looked up or what have he found for people of color that fits us? Because studying history and everything I have studied from Dr. Ben call it a Kibolon, and I researched the word of Kibolon, and I still haven't found nothing solid to say that that's what that continent was called. So what do he suggest? Because he said the word Africans, and we know that that comes from Caucasians. But like he know the history of Haiti, how will we address that to the people as a whole? That's why you have the problem where some people that are black don't like to be called African, because some people don't identify with being African, and that should be something that we all identify with. One label that we all should identify with, and it can't be African, because that goes back to the Caucasian.
Right. Jin, what's your take on that?
Well, the brother's right, and I don't have an answer for him, and that's part of the dilemma of Africans. Just like, you know, you just called me Jean here, and that's what I'm working with right now to this day.
Yeah.
Because and that's why I have adopted the pen name Jafrika Haiti, which means I'm a son of Africa born in Haiti. But I agree with the brother that the word Africa itself is part of that dilemma. But you know, like Malcolm said, you know, if a cat gives birth in an oven, that does not make its kittens biscuits. So. You know, the name that the arrogance of white supremacy has imposed on us, it does do its damage. And as we find ourselves in this difficult situation of having to use words to express ourselves, we need to use temporary solutions. But I agree with the brother. But then what is the solution? The solution is that we need to do our homework, continue to do the research, and not just put things out there because we know the first thing we find, and then we try to impose it and say that this is it. But do the research, and that's I don't have an answer. But what I can say to the brother is that we have powerful proverbs in our culture that we should use as the wisdom of our people to guide us in those difficult situations. For instance, we have a proverb that says, "Mwen konem pa konem." I just said it in Creole, but in English, it would be basically, "I know that I don't know," and I think that kind of thinking can help us deal with those tough situations. Brothers just said, the word Africa does not adequately define us scientifically. I'm myself in that journey of self-discovery. And my family and I, we are hoping in this summer for the first time to set foot in West Africa and to share what we have found in the kingdom of Dahomey when we go there. But, you know, sorry, brother, I don't have the answer, and I share the quest on which you have embarked as well with you.
Thank you for that answer. I'm definitely still researching certain things and trying to find something myself. Another thing that I want to touch on is something that it took me years to find out, and it's still like a hidden secret. We know when we talk about the place called India and this caste system, but the caste system is more deep-rooted than what a lot of us actually know. One of the things I found out that at least close to 20% of slaves that was brought here to the West Indies and what we call the United States now, came from India. One of the things that happened was, I think it was the West Dutch company that was taking black slaves from no matter where they went. They went to Melanesia and seeing black people with kinky hair, they took them as slaves. One of the places, in places like Benin, all over southern India, when they seen what they call Negro people, they took them. And what they'll do, they sent them to slave trading ports in Madagascar and South Africa, and later they'll be shipped up towards the central west coast of Africa on up to where Ghana is at now, and that history has been lost. When I start studying India, what they call India now, right beside the history of what they call Africa now, when I went back to what they was calling the trials of Bharata, I started learning that a lot of the Indians that we see today, they are products of the caste system, but the Indians that's still part of the lower part of the caste system with the curly hair, with the full lips, they've been there forever, and they have records of them being taken as slaves, and a lot of our people don't know that blacks all over this world were taken as slaves, not just from Africa. And I'm not saying that we're not all connected. Black people, point blank, are connected, but It's a trick that these Caucasians pulled on us to make us think that they only took slaves from what they call Africa. They took black people from everywhere and made them slaves.
Okay, great. All right, thanks for your comment. Thanks.
Thanks.
All right, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jin. Let's. I understand what he's saying, but I'd prefer if we stick to Haiti because we're almost out of time. We really haven't touched a lot on Haiti. We're gonna have to do another show because there's a lot of stuff we still need to know. And tonight's topic is Haiti. I understand what he's getting at. Maybe we can touch on Haiti, India at another time. But I'd like for us to focus on Haiti tonight.
Mm-hmm. So I'm listening to you, brother.
All right, good. Let's talk about your book. You know, you wrote a book a while ago called "Praise God Down with Religion." Tell us how that came about and what that's all about, and the role of that. Just tell us about the book and how that came about.
Yes. Well, my book "Vive Bon Dieu à Bas Religion," which is written in Creole, again for the same. Idea of what Sheikh Anta Diop told us to do, try to write in the languages of our people so that it can be accessible to most people, because when we write books, they can be discussed on the radio, and all of our people have access to radio, and discussions can take place. And so I wrote this book to try to put a dent in the damage that white supremacist superstition has done to our people, causing millions of them to be worshiping white people when they think they are worshiping God, and even to the point. And so there's a sentence, for instance, to summarize it. I'll say it in that I write in the book. I don't know if you play dominoes, but when you're playing dominoes with Haitians. And then the last domino that you use, let's say it has a 6 and a 3 on it, and the both ends of the table had a 6 and a 3, we call this décabès. That means you've won twice. So in the book, I have a sentence that says, "Double motif et décabès." That is, the double lies has won twice. And the double deceit that I'm talking about is encapsulated in those two sentences. The first one is, God is white. And that is the picture of Leonardo da Vinci that has been popularized around the world that causes an African person who is praying cannot even close his eyes to imagine God other than that image of Leonardo da Vinci. But you see, that first deceit is not the most dangerous one, and it's not the most important one. This first deceit was introduced in order to impose the second and most powerful and damaging deceit, which is...
What might that be?
That would be whiteness is godly. See, God is white is the image, the physical image. But once you get to whiteness is godly, that means the African has to constantly seek whiteness. And that's why you see we're using all these bleaches. We're changing our skin color. You know, people laugh at Michael Jackson, but Michael Jackson is but an example of what's happening all over the planet. Africans in Africa are suffering from skin cancer because they're trying to be white. Because from the womb, this child is learning that there's something wrong with him as an African, intrinsically wrong. And therefore, that deceit, which causes, for instance, African leaders to be behaving like children in front of their counterparts coming from Europe. When you have meetings in the United Nations and you have heads of states, letting NGO directors give them orders in their own country. You know, leaders of countries like the Congo, which is one of the most powerful and rich nations in the world, taking orders from a European leader. Who inhabits this little place, Belgium or whatever in Europe. That's because they have accepted in their minds that they are dealing with gods and not their own human being brothers and sisters. And that relationship that African people have developed over the years with Christianity, which has turned into a corrupted institution of white supremacy, has done damage that we we have not even started to deal with right now. And that damage is not something that needs to be done consciously anymore by, you know, white supremacist forces somewhere in the Vatican or whatever. Once the thing has been put in motion, it just continues its work. And today, there are European people who are fighting white supremacy, but they don't realize that what they're dealing with are the symptoms, and they need to deal with the root cause, because there's just no way you can erase that damage when you consider that, for instance, you have books like Leviticus in the Old Testament who praise racial slavery, who actually tell the people of Israel that if they need slaves, they need to go look in the populations of other people and take them as slaves, and so that their children would be slaves for the people of Israel. Or in the book of Joshua, telling us that, you know, God stopped the sun so Joshua can have more daylight so he could massacre these other people. And it's the same principle that makes people believe that there's some kind of chosen people of God, preferred people of God, that... And that idea, whereas, you know, people in North America listening to the show might say, well, what kind of nonsense is this guy talking about? Well, I'll tell you that our people take these verses of the Bible quite literally. And many of us actually believe that our people are cursed. And it's,
right.
You know, white people don't have to deal with
sense.
These issues. But
right,
we
exactly.
have to deal with them. And that's
Absolutely.
Why I created that website called GodIsNotWhite.com.
Right. No, I agree with you. Because, I've always been actually kind of baffled as to the obsession with blacks and Christianity, given its history. And to me, I mean, like, if someone would use a concept to help enslave you, why would you embrace it? And if you look at other groups, how they look at Christianity, if you go into an Oriental Catholic church, the images are of Oriental-looking people. Right,
mm-hmm.
And you know, people would say to me, "Well, it doesn't matter God. It doesn't matter what color God is." Well, if that's the case, why don't you take a God, take a picture of me, and replace him on your God, right? Replace your God with an image of me. You probably have some issues with that, right? I mean, a lot of black people would probably have issues with that as well. So, if it doesn't matter what color it is, then why is it such a problem, right? I mean, even Michael Jackson, you know, he sang a song called "It Doesn't Matter If You're Black or White," but if it doesn't matter, why do you look so white? So the reality is who you're trying to kid. And I think, like I said before, it's always something that, for me personally, I've always found it kind of baffling that, you know, our people would gobble religion, especially Christianity, whole without any sort of critical thought. And it's just, you know, sometimes you really have to look at it and wonder, you know, what kind of effect it's had on our people, because sometimes, you know, from my vantage point, always hasn't been good. It hasn't always been good, so it's kind of baffling.
Yeah. No, we are damaged goods, all right? I mean, and that's one of the things that African people need to accept, that we have, and when we talk about reparations, you know, that's the thing I focus on. The first repair that needs to have to take place is in our brains, and that's self-repair. You know, nobody's going to do that for us. And Marcus Garvey said, no one is obligated to do for you that for which you are obligated to do for yourself. And so that, you know, the first repair that we need to make in terms of reparations is to recapture our resources. And our most powerful, important resource is our brain, our minds. We need to get back our minds. And when we do, we will realize that for the longest time, humanity used as the representation of God a black man, Osiris. If you go anywhere in Egypt today, inside of the pyramids, as I have done, you will see that Osiris, I cannot pronounce it the way that they used to because we've lost our languages, is a black man. If you go inside of the Vatican in Rome, you will see Osiris standing with Isis and Horus, the son who died and after 3 days resurrected. That may sound like something you know about. Well, these are black people. And the other day they're talking about the DNA of Tutankhamun. Well, if you look at King Tut, as I've done inside of the Museum of Cairo, you'll see he's a black man, because his father, Akhenaten, was a black man, and because Akhenaten's mother, Queen Tiye, was a black woman born in the Sudan.
Wow.
So all of these people are representations of God when we Africans were free of our minds to imagine God in our own image.
We got to run, but we got to do the show again. We got to run, but let's do the show again real soon. All right?
Brother, my answer is always yes, so you call and I'll answer.
I will. Pleasure. Take good care.
Yeah.
I still have a lot of stuff to talk about, and let's do it again real soon.
All right.
Good. Hey, when are you planning to come to Toronto?
I'm not sure, but hopefully before the beginning of the summer, I hope.
Not a problem. Listen, let's be in touch. Let's do this show again. I guess I didn't even get through halfway of the show, so we've got to do this again. There's just no two ways about it. Let's talk real soon, and let's see if we can get this done over the next few weeks.
Okay, brother. I await your call.
All right, take care. Pleasure talking to you.
All right.
Have a good night.